Popular militant commander called Burhan Wani was killed early this month.
What are your views about Islamic terrorism? Is it a major concern for every non-Islamic country?
Absolutely, 100%, and we should be aware of the facts. People call us Islamophobe, and I think this particular title also came in order to suppress what the history was. We're not talking about who's good, who's bad, but this is the fact. India has 22% Muslim now. 1% Hindus actually contribute 6% to the GDP. 1% Muslim contributes 1% to the GDP. Out of 1% Hindus, 0.1% in jail. And out of 1% Muslims, 9% is in jail. So something has to be done in this particular case.
After 9/11 attacks, even Shah Rukh Khan, he was thoroughly checked on entering America. And Shah Rukh was very embarrassed about it. What are your thoughts on this?
I feel that today Islamic community in America is looked at as a victims rather than anything else. So today, I don't think Islamic people are looked at as a problem in any non-Islamic countries.
According to you, what is the best way to counter Islamic terrorism?
There is a narrative out there in Western countries that Hindus are promoting lies and deception. There is no love jihad. But there is. They have promoted an idea that love jihad or love trap jihad really doesn't exist when there is millions of girls, Hindus are actually getting trapped into this issue.
Namaste, I am Captain Praveen Chaturvedi from Prachyam Studios, and today we have a very special guest from across the seas, from US. She is Poornima Nathji, who is now running for the US Congress. And today we are going to talk about, you know, her life journey, her, you know, what she has in mind, you know, what are her aspirations. What would she do, you know, for the cause of Indians and for the cause of Hindus there, and a lot of other things. So, Poornima ji, wonderful to connect with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Praveen ji. My honor.
So, let's start with, you know, when did you leave India? When did you reach US? When did you get settled there? And how all this...
I was born in the northeast of India. It's a very neglected, you know, almost like untouched area of India. But I had no big dreams as such that I will one day come to America, or let alone get out of where I was born at or raised at. But, you know, fate brought me to South India. That's where I actually did my engineering. Even when I was doing engineering, I had no such big dreams that one day I'll come to America. With a job soon after my engineering, it brought me to the place where I am, which is called Milwaukee. It's a very small place. Nobody knows. I'm sure you don't know either. And I have always used Chicago as a center point to refer to the place that I am at. So basically what ended up is I come from a small place called Tripura, and nobody knows in India. And when I was doing my engineering in the South India, they thought I was part of North, and the North Indians thought I was South India. We actually didn't exist for anybody in the mainland India. And I ended up somewhere called Milwaukee. It's difficult to pronounce, and they didn't know where it was. And it always stuck in my mind, okay, I am nobody. We are nobody. And that's how the life was. But I ended up in here, and there was no a dream of staying here either. But somehow the fate had that I had to stay here, and I settled over here later on, and then worked in the nonprofit arena for over a decade, 15 years plus, and then in between I started the nonprofit. That time also politics was not in my radar, and then later on through the nonprofit I met a lot of politicians. And somehow I was pulled into the politics as a vehicle for public service. And my goal is actually public service. And I thought, what better way to do something for the community I live in, and probably broader community, and for the micro minority people like me in America too. So politics may be dirty, yes, politics may be filthy, but it was supposed to be for public service. And I feel through this vehicle, we can do a lot of good for the people.
Absolutely. Yeah, the good people have to come, you know, with the, such wise thoughts, you know, to serve the people. Otherwise, it's an old saying that politics is a place of scoundrels. So unless good people come, it cannot be made a good place, a better place to work. And also to, you know, serve your own people. That's very important. So what was the trigger that, you know, that this thought came to you that you have to come in politics now?
Well, as I said, politics was not in my radar, not from the background I come from, not from the surroundings I was, you know, brought up. Even when I came to America, I had no idea that one day, you know, I'll be speaking for this particular platform and what it can do for public service. But I think, you know, back in, I was already in nonprofit, I was already in advocacy mode, and I was actually working on my organization. We focus on diversity, we focus on heritage, civilization. So that's how I actually became very close to the to our heritage through our organization that I founded. And through that, I was already doing some advocacy, but it was not from a political stance at all. But then when in 2016 timeframe, we saw President Donald Trump, at that point of time candidate, came along. And there was an interesting phenomenon I saw in America. It's a massively vicious attack against him. I actually and was very intrigued to find out exactly what was happening. So I started digging around, started looking into things, and looked into the policies that he was advocating at that point of time. And I was very inclined towards his policy. I'm like, that makes sense. I mean, obviously we're going through several issues, and I think the pointers he's bringing it absolutely 100% is aligning with me. And that's how I got aligned in the right side of the political arena, if you will. And obviously through my work, I was already working on the heritage side of it. And then when I started digging through the history of Hindus, history of Indians, I realized that we Hindus obviously had gone through massive amount of invasions, massive amount of colonizations, and still somehow along the line.
And persecution too. Yeah, a lot of persecution we have gone through.
Absolutely. And then that's when I realized that how come we have never spoken out about us? You know, everybody is speaking about themselves, but I don't see ourselves. That's when I actually became a bit more vocal, started talking about the civilizational heritage that we have. Our ancestors have done fabulous job in it. And I'm literally was new, and I was every single day I was fascinated by things that I was finding out. So it was a extremely, you know, enlightening journey for me, for personally. But politics is not, to me at that point of time, it became very clear to me, politics is not something that I'm not going to, I totally changed my view towards politics. This is a vehicle for public service, and I'm going to utilize this for public service to do something for the community that I have called home today here. And we are going through tremendous amount of difficulties here as well. And including, if I can do something for the broader community as a Hindu, I shall do that as well. And that's how, and I that's how I think I'm trying to bring both these angles together.
You proudly identify yourself as a Hindu, and you really carry your Hindu identity on your sleeve. And you openly express your beliefs. That makes you a very proud Hindu, definitely. So when a proud Hindu like you, you know, comes to a level, to a position of power, you know, at a place where he can really do something, make bring about a change, what are the issues you think that you would take up, you know, for the cause of Hindus?
In the last few months, there's 18, 19 students, Indian students have been killed in America. And that's a massively grievous situation for me, because every situation, I'm actually looking at it from other side also. If something like that happened on Indian ground, on Indian soil, for an American citizen, what would have happened? So to me, these are important issues. And I'm not doing it for Hindu specifically. I'm actually doing it for a human. That person came to America for their American dream, for wherever they came from. But they came with, you know, a massive dream that they wanted to study here. They wanted to do something for their family. They wanted to do something for their lives in the country. But they ended up, you know, losing their life over here. So is it actually anti-Hindu sentiment, or is it something bigger going on? So the people like us who have called America as a home today, our next generation are going to be, you know, wondered. They're going to wonder about, is it safe for us? Is America safe for us at all? So to answer your question, it's not just for Hindu specifically, but for human, we have to have certain kind of dignity. We're not animals. We're not living in a jungle. We're living in the best country in the world. And if we can't keep a person's life safe, I think there's a bigger issue there. So in general, for Hindus, though, I've seen anti-Hindu sentiment increasing day by day. And I've seen that especially after Modi ji actually came to power. So I think there's a massive agenda happening. I've seen a lot of things happening in the USCIRF arena, just like they've unnecessarily called India as a CPC, as a country of particular concern, and things like that. And they're consistent and continuous attack against the Hindus. The Hindus are somehow a terrorist, and we are somehow extremist because we speak about Hindus, and I am labeled in all kind of names, etc. To me, it doesn't make sense. We don't have any terrorist organization. We didn't invade any countries either. We don't go around and, you know, impose our beliefs to anybody, although we get all kinds of lectures. So it's all one way streets that we Hindus have been tolerating for quite some time. So the peacefulness, the non-violence that we bring to us, and how long will it go on without any self-defense? And that's where I think it comes down to the point of dignity, respect as a human we deserve. We are not able to demand that at this point of time. It's all one-way street. No matter which country we go to, we bow down. We are so meek. We are so weak. We don't have any political social clout. People are doing well individually, engineers, doctors, lawyers, mansions, cars, Rolls Royce, and etc. But I don't think we as a community are there for the broader Hindu community. And that's something that I think as a community, we have to work together. And my goal is to probably through these platforms, if we can encourage Hindus to donate, Hindus to stand for another Hindus, just like how, you know, Muslims do, or Christians do, or Sikh brothers do, that would be a massive change for our community.
Beautiful. I really, you know, from Prachyam, which is the first Hindu OTT in the world, I definitely would request and appeal to the audiences who are watching this, that here we have somebody who's brave enough to stand for the Hindu causes, and even you should be supported very generously in every way they can. So because there are very few people who are thinking along these lines, who are not bothered about, you know, the safety and security of the Hindus there. So it is good, you know, that, you know, there's something, this is something which is driving you and which is inspiring you. And I'm sure once you're there, you know, you would definitely bring about a change for the Hindu community in U.S. Apart from this, Purimaji, illegal immigration, you know, is a very significant issue in India as well as in USA. And national security has always been a primary concern. Is illegal immigration threatening the national security of America?
100% actually. Today, they say that in Biden administration, they've let at about 10 million illegal immigration, illegal immigrants. But in general, I say that before then also there were illegal immigrants entering, but the number was very small. And this is one of my top issues, because if you don't have secured border, you don't have a nation. And obviously, you know, 200-300 years ago, we didn't have a concept of nation. And I don't have preference whether you want a nation or borders or not. But if that is the case, that we want to go on an open border kind of situation, I actually demand that all the 200 countries have go that route too, including the 56 Muslim nations who have occupied the Middle East. Are they going to do that? That the answer is obviously no. So the question is why countries like America or India has to go that route. And it cannot be one-way street anymore. It has to be, or, you know, we have to discuss it exactly what kind of issues we are facing. Where it, the people on the left side say is that these people are keeping our economy alive, and they work the one that we actually, but the people of here don't want to work. The truth of the matter is some people don't even want to work. You know, and they want welfare system. They want the free money coming from the government. So that's not how a healthy society can live, with government money, free money coming through. So India is as a socialist country, as you know, it was made into socialist country back in 1976 forcefully. Now, with socialism comes welfare, welfare comes crimes and corruption and all kinds of stuff. And now we're looking at, yet with all the welfare, the previous government couldn't eradicate the poverty. And similar things is going to happen over here. America is not a socialist country, but the entire left ecosystem is actually working to make this country into a socialist country. And everything that we have seen or we have observed in India is going to happen over here. Now, if India has 68 to 70% poverty with the less than $2 an hour income per World Bank or so, can you imagine today America surviving like that with 60-70% poverty rate? The crime is going to go through the roof. Obviously, this is not going to be the country that is or was known as in the last few decades, right? So the whole left ecosystem has destroyed India. They couldn't eradicate the corruption, the poverty, the crimes, and made it into a, one of the superpower. Now that you have a centrist government, I would say, the government is doing a massive amount of development. And they are also bringing out people from poverty and giving welfare to the ones that requires welfare. And welfare should be temporary too. And if you need the a certain help from the government in order to for you to stand on your feet, and then that would help you to run, that's perfectly fine. And welfare shouldn't be permanent. And none of these schemes should be permanent either. But what is the goal of America at this point of time in terms of leftist policies is make everything permanent, make all the money that is coming out from the government has to be permanent. So illegal immigration is hurting the normal people who's actually here, tax paying, law abiding citizens. They're not getting any benefit from the government, they're actually paying. And in the place that I live in, Pravinji, our taxes are constantly increasing. We have increased recently, we have increased sales tax, and our taxes are, the area that we live in, it's not a wealthy area, but at the same time, the taxes, the poor people are paying the taxes. They're hurting. And because this amount of money is going to the illegals who's coming, crossing the border, with impunity, and government is taking care of them, saying that nobody wants to do the work. But we have people here who simply don't want to work and just availing government welfare. So to me, all in all, it's just hurting the regular good people, and similarly the way it actually hurt India as well.
Do you know Bharat was made victim of conspiracies, censorship, and ideological subversions? We all have suffered a lot. Let's end it now. We bring to you Pratyam, an unapologetic video platform for Hindus. Protect your family from false narratives about Bharat. Documentaries, classes, shows that you will not find on YouTube.
Pratyam.
Give power to the Hindu voice for the cost of one coffee. Subscribe now at Pratyam.com. Yeah, apart from that, it's always wise to learn from others, you know, from other countries. Look what happened to Europe. Look what happened to UK. Look what happened to Scandinavia. You know, they had, you know, opened their doors, you know, just because of some human compassion. And you see what happened there, what that society was brought to. Look, you know, how the crimes went up there. And so much burden on the economy, and now they are, some of them are seriously thinking of evicting them out. So the US can learn from that, and so can India, that we have to be very clear about things. So apart from this, in your view, what are your thoughts on the Islamic terrorism? Is it a major concern for every non-Islamic country?
Yes, and I think yes, absolutely, 100%, and we should be aware of the facts. We're not talking about made-up stories and deceptive tactics. We're talking about hundreds of years, millennium history, historical instances, what we have gone through, especially as a Hindu, now that we know the history of our people, our ancestors. And I think it's important for the non-Islamic countries to know what we have gone through. People call us Islamophobe and they label us. And I think this particular title also came in order to suppress what the history was. And we can't address any issue without addressing or accepting what the truth is and what the fact is. In order for us to treat this and address this, we have to accept it. And then the community has to accept it as a whole, and Islamic community has to accept it as well. The fact of the matter is that they're not accepting it. The fact of the matter is they call the rest of the people as Islamophobe, and they also actually push bills. In United States, we have an Islamophobia bill, which was put forward by Ilhan Omar. And in order to suppress, and obviously one of the act would have been to go after India through that as well. So to me, we cannot address this menace without being strong about what the fact was. And there shouldn't be any issues. And we're not trying to, label every single person. Every single person from that particular community as well. But the idea that speaking about fact and truth is defined as some kind of racist act is something is quite concerning. So every non-Islamic country has to know the history and accept it and address it. And that doesn't mean there is no Muslim. In fact, India has 22% Muslim now. Israel has 20% Palestinian Muslims. In America, Islamic population before was 1%, very similar to what Hindu population is. But if you look at just from a perspective of numbers, let's say 1% Hindus, 1% Muslims. 1% Hindus actually contribute 6% to the GDP. 1% Muslim contributes 1% to the GDP. 1% Hindus, out of 1% Hindus, 0.1% in jail. And out of 1% Muslims, 9% is in jail. So if you look at the number wise, we're not talking about who's good, who's bad, who's, but this is the fact. If this can happen here, then we can actually superimpose this data anywhere else and see something has to be done in this particular case. Now, today that we have 40 million, over 40 million illegal immigrants, we have no idea where they came from. We have no idea where they are, what kind of ideology they bring in. I don't know who's in our backyards. We don't know what kind of entities have been working with them. And now the protest that we have seen turned into riots and violent protest in the name of Palestinian freedom. It's happening in college campuses like Harvard's and Columbia. It's concerning because they don't know what the history is, and they actually are praying to Allah in the campuses. They're actually, the queers are saying that it's queers for Palestine. Do they know what's happening in Islamic country to the homosexuals? They don't know that, or they don't want to know that. They think they're part of something. So to me, it's a lot of hypocrisy that is happening, and labels actually shouldn't be scaring us at all. And that's how they suppress us. And I'm at a point at this point of time, no matter what label anybody wants to extend to my soul, my life, it's not going to bother me enough.
So according to you, what is the best way to counter Islamic terrorism?
As I said, I think in order to address any kind of issues, we have to accept the issue first. For instance, let's say a drug addict kid. In order for us to even treat that person, you can't just go around and treat them, take him to a psychotherapist and things like that. He's going to go back into drug again. And it's just how we are. We just adapt and we just go back into what our past is. The point I'm trying to say is that as the Islamic community has to also accept, but I'm not banking on the fact that the 1.8 billion strong Islamic community is going to accept it. But the non-Islamic community, which is about 6 billion now, can we not accept the fact that this is a problem and at least address the issue from a perspective of fact? For instance, if there is a incident that happens in Indian case, let's say a Hindu girl is trapped into love trap jihad, and then we see that girl is either in live-in relationship with that particular boy, and then when pressurized, she gets chopped off. In that particular case, can you not at least write a top story that this has happened? But what happened in America with that particular story, they have promoted an idea that love jihad or love trap jihad really doesn't exist when there is millions of girls, Hindus are actually getting trapped into this issue. But there is a narrative out there in Western countries that Hindus are promoting lies and deception. There is no love jihad, but there is. Why can't we say it? Why can't we say the truth? Why are we afraid of it? So we have to stop being afraid. We have to stop being frightened that somebody is going to come and kill us. At the end of the day, we are all going to die. At the end of the day, we came here, we are going to go. But if we can't do certain things without a fear that somebody's going to come and, target our family, somebody's going to come and target our home, somebody's going to come and target our job, somebody's going to come and target us, then who are we living for? what are we supposed to do? I think that we have to leave that the fear from our souls, from our from our aspect at this point of time, and just do what is the right thing. Whatever happens after that, let it be. Just let's say the truth and let's at least try to address the problem.
After 9/11 attacks, there was a noticeable shift in America's treatment to Muslims. Even celebrities from here, like Shah Rukh Khan, were not exempted from this. You know, he was thoroughly checked and investigated upon entering America. And Shah Rukh was very embarrassed about it. And he felt compelled to declare to the world that my name is Khan and I'm not a terrorist. What are your thoughts on this?
See, in America, after 9/11, the shift has actually happened on the other side. What I say is the best marketing, the biggest and the best, the fantastic marketing team is the Islamic community. 9/11 happened in America, but today, the 180-degree shift from that is fantastic. They actually tell that 9/11 was not done by Muslims at all. It was done by Israel. And if you look at the amount of infiltration that has happened in the American media, American academia, and the corporate sectors and the nonprofit NGOs, it's fascinating to me. Today's ground, it's actually they shifted the narrative completely. They are being portrayed as a victims. And no other community could have achieved it. It was only Islamic community who has achieved it. So today, I don't think Islamic people are looked at as a problem in any non-Islamic countries. They are looked at as a victims. That's how the narratives has shifted in America. If you remember, 6 days after 9/11, George Bush went to the site and actually told Islam is peaceful religion. And that actually caught me quite unexpectedly. I was shocked to hear that. Honestly, at that point of time, by 9/11, I didn't know a whole lot of things in terms of what was going on either. With the knowledge that I come today, I had no idea 20 years ago. And I was not even in politics at that point of time. But I was like, something is not right. So you have to listen to your heart and your soul sometimes that if something, you know, gut says something is not right, maybe it's not right. Look into it. So maybe, you know, all this comes together today. I feel that today Islamic community in America is not a, is looked at as a victims rather than anything else. And to me, the way the Palestinian movement has shown, the BLM, Antifa was shown in the streets, I can say otherwise that Mr. Khan would be a hero in America today.
Do Hindus feel discriminated against in America?
You see, in normal life, let's say if you're not in politics or if you're not speaking out as Hindu, or if you are not defending Hinduism, or if you are not coming across as a strong Hindu, you have no problem at all. You will not even hear anything but the other side of it. But at the moment, let's say if somebody comes and whether it's Jehovah's Witness or Jesuits or some Christian conversion, entities or missionaries come and try to tell that, you know, there are other false God and your religion is, false religion, your gods, you have too many gods and etc. And you try to defend. At that point of time, you will see the massive discriminations are there. Even in my tweets, you know, sometimes I do feel that if I speak about the conversions that's happening in India, if I stand against the Hindu conversions that's happening either in the Punjab area or the Northeast or South and etc., I actually get a lot of flack from the folks, not just India, but here too. So if you don't care about Hindus or Hinduism or Hindutva, there is no discrimination because you are bendable, you are affordable, you are, you know, ripe candidate for conversion, which is what I call that. This is secular. This is how the secular is, because they respond to you, oh, we're not religious, we're spiritual. That's how we used to say, but we never defended our religion, saying, how does it matter if we have, let's say, for instance, it's not true that we have 33 crore gods or 3 million gods or whatever. It's not true. But let's say even if it is true, how does it matter to anybody else? That's how I answer today. And if somebody says my God is false, I'm like, who told you, who gave you the authority to tell me my God is false? Oh, what is your God's name? Do you know what's God's name? Somebody came the other day, told me God's name is Jehovah. I said, I have my Gita and my God name is Shiva, Krishna, Vishnu. How does it matter to you? So, you know, that kind of stuff, in that particular case, you will see, you know, massive angst. Oh my God, she's so strong in her faith. So if you remember, there was an interview that came along. Vivek Ramaswamy was asked about, as a Hindu, as a presidential candidate, how is he going to actually run this country? And he went around and he went around about finding some similarities between the Christianity and Hinduism. But my fundamental question was, actually, if that question was asked to me, I would have asked, why did you even ask this question? What was the intention of asking the question? To me, religion are paths. Religions takes one soul to moksha, the salvation, the liberation. And it doesn't matter what you follow. Either way, at the end of the day, if you have to attain moksha, you will attain moksha through different paths. And my path can be different from you, or that doesn't mean my path is false or my path is not true, my path is not right, and I have to follow just one sect. To me, that question itself is fundamentally wrong. For instance, we have, you know, Indian CMs who are Christians. Have any Hindus ever gone to them and asked, as a Christian, how are they running the state? Have they ever asked this question to a head of the state who's of a different faith in India? And to me, that question is so indignifying. And I actually thought about that particular interview after, and I felt like if somebody ever asked me this question, my answer would be a question. Why did you ask this question? What is the intention behind this?
Well, did you ask Vivek Ramaswamy that, you know, why you had to go about, you know, giving all kind of proving the similarities between Hinduism and Christianity? Did you ask him?
Yes, in Twitter, I have posed a question. He did not answer me, of course. but, you know, this is a Christian country. I don't have to, you know, pretend it is not a Christian country. And I don't have any issues with that.
Absolutely.
At all. But the fact is that I think every entity, every individual has the right, the human dignity to choose what's right for them. And I think that's where I think we're shifting the narrative. Because I'm in a Christian country, shouldn't I be speaking about my faith at all? If I speak about my faith, my belief, does it mean that I'm actually against them? The point is no. That's the conversation that is not happening. In India, you have, you know, today you have 10% Christians, we have 22% Muslim, where Hindus are shrinking. Sadly, they don't actually defend Hindus. Most of them are. We're all seculars. And I have no problem with secular either. As long as it's, you know, balanced, as long as it's not lopsided. We defend ourselves too. You defend yourselves, no problem. But I mean, if you can be 10% in India as a Christian, I'm not 10% in America today. We're 1%. And we don't even have political and social clout. Yet we get all kinds of flags today, that today as a Hindu, you cannot speak in a Christian country. A lot of people actually tell me in Twitter, go back to your Hindu country, Hindutva country. Why you are here in a Christian country? Does ever anybody ask this question to a Christian in India? Have we ever thought about asking this question to the Christians in India? Can you imagine how indignifying this question
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely, it is. You can always tell them that there is no Hindu country in the world.
Absolutely.
We can't call even Bharat as a Hindu country. I mean, that's a sad part of it, you know.
Yeah, so, technically we're not. It's not a Hindu country. Yes.
Do you know Bharat was made victim of conspiracies, censorship, and ideological subversions? We all have suffered a lot. Let's end it now. We bring to you Prachyam, an unapologetic video platform for Hindus. Protect your family from false narratives about Bharat. Documentaries, classes, shows that you will not find on YouTube.
Prachyam.
Give power to the Hindu voice for the cost of one coffee. Subscribe now at Prachyam.com. Purnimaji, you are a strong supporter of Donald Trump. Is there any specific reason for that?
Yes, I think Donald Trump's policies is very patriotic, is very country-oriented. As you remember, he actually didn't start any war. The war-mongering militant military agencies of this country was actually quite frustrated with him. And he pulled out himself from the Paris Accord as well. He also, did a deal with Abraham Accord in the Middle East. So there was all in all, I think America was stronger. We had energy prices low. People were, and we didn't feel the pressure of inflation, obviously. And we were okay. We were safe. We were secured. Our borders were secured. So from a patriotic perspective, from a nation perspective, his policies actually are very good for the people, good people, if you will, not the criminals. So to me, that's how a leader of a country should be. And if this is how we want to go in the future with the countries, which we already have 200 countries. Now, if we don't have 200 countries and every country have an open border, you just go around and start, occupying others' land and etc., we can have a different conversation at that point of time. But I don't think as a, civilization, we're there at this point of time. So Donald Trump's policies are for the nation, for the good people. It also allows the good law-abiding taxpayers to do something for themselves, for the country, and be proud of it. And I think this is important today. And this is what the shift I've seen in India as well after PM Modi. So I feel very connected to both the leaders, if you will. In fact, when I started researching, I realized that this is a sort of like a connecting thread to all the right side of the politicians, whether Shinzo Abe or Bolsonaro or, even in Argentina, you have the right-wing government today.
Or even Putin.
But the
leading media channels in US, they don't feel the same way about Trump, you know, the way they have been haunting him and demonizing him. What do you have to say on that?
Yeah, it's the same thing. The left wing is against Donald Trump. Left wing is against anybody who wants to actually secure the country. The nationalists and the patriots, they do that to Modi. They do that to Putin as well. So to me, I think the difference between Donald Trump and Modi is, Modi is looking at it from an entire world perspective, but Donald Trump is also not behind, because he actually brought in peace in the Middle East. He actually improved the relationship with India. So he's actually trying to work with every country and maintain peace as well as work together and not demonizing other countries. So the India and US relationship was always strained. From beginning, in 1971, you know what happened during Nixon time. And then today, through Obama, there's a two-phase, I feel. you know, from American standpoint, the policies are, foreign policies are, you say something but do something else. And that's not something that can continue any longer, because we, every, countries are, growing at this point of time. Internet is in everybody's hand. People can literally look up something in 30 seconds, 1 minute. And so people are looking at it as well. And they are very open in terms of finding out and also countering issues. So to me, I think, going up, if we can talk about the media, American media, they're very left-wing, they're very Islamo-Marxist, if you will. So they're actually exactly like what Indian Islamo-Marxist media is. They have never been nice or kind to Modi or Yogiji. They have never been kind to the good things that is happening to the country. No matter what kind of developments is happening, no matter what kind of improvements are happening, they are not never going to say something nice for the other party that they don't want to speak about. So I don't see any difference between the Indian left media versus American media at this point of time.
Yeah, it's the same cabal, I think, all over the world. And one thing is very noteworthy that Trump was the first U.S. president to go to North Korea.
100%.
Yeah, because 100%. And that was a big thing, So he made friends, I absolutely agree with you. I have really liked and appreciated his views, his efforts to bring world peace. And apart from that, his vision of making America great again.
Absolutely. I think it deserves it too. If you will, there's a World Economic Forum agenda is happening. You own nothing, you will be happy. 15 minutes cities are coming up. So there's a lot of concerns around what is going to happen to the young generation that is today coming up from schools and colleges. Are they really going to buy homes at all? Or are we going to go away from private properties? So these kind of things are, creating a lot of confusions. It's sort of like the rich and elites have mansions and the Aston Martins and Rolls Royces and etc. Yet the peasants like us, the regular ordinary people, don't have anything, and we should be happy. We shouldn't be aspiring to attain anything. So the way the country is going, and the left ecosystem is pushing, I don't think, mass is going to accept it in America. And in the place that I am at right now, Pravinji, we have poverty over here, and black poverty is highest over here. And this particular position that I'm running in U.S. Congress, that has been under Democrat rule since 1949. You're talking about 77 years. Democrat rule. So when I go to the inner cities today and they ask me the question, what are you going to do for the black community? I actually pause and ask them what they have done for you since 1949. Could you please tell me three things? That's where I start my conversation. And I think this gives me an opportunity to even turn them around and ask them to, could you please open your eyes and see what you have been voting for? What you have been standing for? Can we please ask for a change and at least do some changes? And then you ask for a question 5-10 years later, but you haven't asked this question for 77 years, yet you want to vote a certain way. Yet you want to vote for left ecosystem. Yet you want to vote for the same person who had been there for generations. Elitist dynastic politics that I see, or I've seen in India, it's happening here too. So I don't see any difference at the end of the day. In politics are probably same everywhere. People are hurting everywhere. Nobody wants to actually make a change. And politics is dirty because of certain politician who came before. That doesn't mean that it has to continue the same way. And then to me, I think it's an opportunity for me to explain what we have seen in India and not allow them to go through this here. Poverty is here as well. Crimes are here as well, and high crimes over here as well. So if there is any way I can expose and at least enlighten them that this is not by accident, this is by design, I can at least make somebody's life better, I suppose.
Very true. Purimaji, for centuries, Hindus have been persecuted, you know. They've been persecuted for a very long time, you know, for more than 1,000 years now. And even in the current times, if you see, the persecution of Kashmiri Pandits was not long time back. Yet, you know, the world leaders have often, they have overlooked this suffering which was brought to Hindus. This attitude needs to change. How do you think, you know, this change can be brought about?
Pravinji, that's a very good question. My first attempt to address this is within the Hindu community. What are we going to do? What have we done? And what we are about to take on. We can blame the world as much as we want, Pravinji, but I think it's not their responsibility. They don't care. To be frank, they don't care. Nobody cares about anybody. It's themselves. So now if we as a community don't come together and speak about our issues, nobody is going to take up. And if we constantly go around and say that America has to take up, why should America take up Hindu issues? America is not a Hindu country. American Hindus are 1%. And Hindus are actually, we are assimilated. We don't talk about our issues ourselves. So why should they take this issue? And I went to my senator, I went to my representatives, and I've spoken to our issues that this is happening, this is coming. Would you please help us? Would you please speak for us? And they will not. I have not seen any statement, even when, you know, the anti-CA resolutions were happening. In fact, one of the city that pushed anti-CA resolution was my city, Milwaukee. I had no clue about it. It was done in a hush-hush situation. And I reached out the mayor at that point of time, the council, the common council person that pushed, and he's the mayor today. And I've reached out to them. I've asked them tremendous amount of question. How did you pass this anti-CAA resolution? What do you know about anti-CAA? You didn't even know how to pronounce CAA. You actually didn't know how to say CAA in the bill. And I've listened to that video multiple times. And what do you know? Who gave you all the information? Why did you pass it? He had no answers. He never responded to me. And they are not going to, because they are run by Islamic brotherhoods. They are run by Islamic entities that they have given all the information to them. Hindu entities didn't give them any reports. They didn't give them any information. So I can't blame anybody else but ourselves. It is us. We have to speak up. We have to say our stories, and we have to build coalition and tell them that this is what's happening. And there are a couple of, you know, Hindu groups in Washington, D.C. trying to do that. But I haven't seen any concrete results. And I've seen a Hindu caucus coming up. I haven't seen any concrete results in terms of either a press release come through or a strong statement come through. All these Indian students are getting killed. I just told you earlier. I haven't seen any statement come through from the Hindu caucus that was created just recently in December of last month, or the caucus that was created by Mr. Taneda from Michigan congressman. So there is no concrete result. There's a lot of talks happening, a lot of conversations happening, but we Hindus don't see any results. To me, at this point of time, it is time for us to see something concrete, tangible, in public, not in the closed doors. And that's where I am at. And then to me, in order to make that happen, it has to happen from within, from us. And that's why I have no shame of being a Hindu in a Christian country. And I have no problem as long as I'm not converted, as long as I'm not forced to convert it, as long as I'm not forced to stop being who I am.
Well, we certainly have, you know, a lot of hopes from you. You have always been interested in social service. Should the Hindu community in U.S. consider your entry into politics as an extension of your interest of social service?
100%. As I said, I mean, I'm interested in public service, and that's what I've been doing through nonprofit. I do festival here. It's called India Fest. I started as India Fest Milwaukee. Now it's India Fest Wisconsin. I've been doing it for 11, 12 years now. The whole goal is to actually, advocate about Indic heritage, civilization. And I'm proud of my heritage. We are the only one who survived a massive amount of invasion, colonization, population. We're the only one, between 1820 to 1920, British colonizers killed about 165 million Hindus or Indians, if you will. Most of them were Hindus. Now, nobody knows that. We all know about Jews, 6 million Jews killed by Hitler, but nobody knows about 165 million Hindus killed by a British just in 40 years. 40 years time frame. So these statistics are something's very important for me to speak about. So I'm interested in heritage and the ancestors of ours, that what they have done or what they have gone through, the amount of trauma, the pain that they have gone through. If we can actually communicate this through our platform, is going to be very important. And heritage is important. And I don't see any country in the entire world which has this kind of heritage at all. And then why should I be ashamed of that? Why should I be pushed into saying that they tell us we are actually folks that drinks cow urine, we worship millions of gods, we have Kali. Even if we have Kali, what is that representing? Even we don't have Sati anymore. And then we don't, not everybody drinks cow urine also, like camel urine. So it's sort of like, you're stereotyping us, shaming us for being whatever we are. And you don't give us the choice for being a Hindu the way we are, want to be. Just leave us alone. We don't want to, be labeled, or don't dictate us how our how our narrative should be. We will dictate what it needs to be. We'll define what it should be. We don't want the definition given to us by somebody else. So that's where I'm at mentally. And I want to make sure that this kind of conversation happens. And I think there's no better way to do this without advocacy. And advocacy can happen in the political arena. And that's why I told you, politics is dirty, of course. But I can't change that by myself alone. I have to just stand by what I believe in and advocate my belief through this vehicle that we have at this point of time. And then hopefully it will help our community individually, but also the broader community that I serve over here. I'm a micro minority here. Even if I'm the only Hindu here in my constituency, I have no problem being a Hindu, because I come from the humanity perspective, and our belief, our faith actually gives us that foundation of humanity. We even serve ants, we serve animals, we don't look at any lives as inferior to us. And we worship nature, we worship sun, we worship moon, we worship plants and planets and trees and all kinds of entities in this world. What better way to serve this nature, this world, the universe, the life that has been given? So we are obviously pro-life. We don't glorify death. We don't say that, somebody is dying, is becoming a martyr or something. So we are all about life. We are all about choices too. We're all about growth of our soul. What better way to do service through political arena with that kind of mentality? So I am for America and I have America First policy, but I also want to make sure that my belief, my faith is not downgraded or degraded at any cost.
So you have become a voice for Hindus in America. So can the Hindus there be convinced that, this voice is going to become more loud, more pronounced if you're elected?
See me as a human. Yes, that's the first thing. As a human, I'm actually fighting for my own dignity too. I don't want anybody to look at me as a inferior person because I'm a Hindu. I'm a human first. I bleed like them. I bleed like a black person. I bleed like a brown person. I bleed like a white person. I would die like one of them too. Once I'm dead, rituals has to be done for me is fine. But then as a human, I'm a human first. And then my ideology comes and my policy shapes from there. So I want to make sure that we as a Hindu are not looked at as inferior to anybody, whether it's a Muslim, whether it's a Christian, doesn't really matter. We have our faith, and our faith, to me, is the superior.
There are, we have witnessed, you know, numerous instances of mass shootings in America. And states are struggling to implement policies to prevent these horrific events. Is America's gun culture becoming increasingly dangerous?
This is a very good question. I'll answer in two parts. One is America is the only country that has Second Amendment, which allows them to do carry a concealed weapon or so for self-defense, which I think is very important in the sense because no other country has it. If you remember in India, where, you know, the 1919 Rowlatt Act that has happened after that, Jallianwala Bagh happened. Why did it happen? Because they actually, British made sure that every Indian is, you know, all the weapons have been taken away. They couldn't gather more than four people and things like that. That kind of things were, you know, instances were created in order for to make sure that there's no uprising against British. And right after that, Jallianwala Bagh happened. Basically, they killed a unarmed villagers, thousands of it, with no defense mechanism. America is the only country which has the defense mechanism. Now, the question comes to is how, what is the extent it will be allowed, right? If we are living in a, you know, the perfect society, nobody needs a Second Amendment. Nobody needs a weapon. But nobody's living in a perfect society. So we are seeing crimes increasing. But at the same time, mental illness also is increasing. If you know, in schools today, you know, I've seen certain very concerning issues within schools coming up that adolescents, you know, younger children, even you know, the kinder care children, they're being taught in terms of gender educations and sexual educations and things like that. And then when it goes to, you know, 11, 12 years or 13 year old, they're actually being given hormones to change their gender. So gender dysphoria is an issue. Mental illness is an issue. We are seeing that these kind of things are happening behind the scene without the knowledge of the parents too. So a lot of parents are actually waking up and fighting against the schools. They're running for school boards for issues like that, because drag queens are seen and pride flags are seen in the classrooms, in younger classrooms, and the amount of books they are actually circulating, which talks about the physical interaction, the sex educations, it's mind-boggling to me. And these are actually happening for small children's, you know, just elementary schools and plus just 11, 12 year old kids. To me, it's beyond that. It's not just gun culture. There's something that is fundamentally going on in America today is going to create 15, 20 years later, you are looking at a generation which is completely out of order and totally mentally ill. So that's where we're going to. Now we're coming back to gun culture we're talking about. So a lot of people are actually taking it seriously that you don't know who's going to come and shoot you in your doorstep. So we have to have some defense mechanism. Now, can we actually give guns to the folks who's mentally ill? No, right? So there has to be some balance, some conversation, some policies around that. Now, you can never take away a weapon from the criminals. They're going to find a way to get guns, regardless whether you take away guns from the good law-abiding citizens or not. So the point to where I'm going to go with this is that as a society, we really have to discuss this matter very seriously, because right now we are in a dilemma at this point of time, what to do. Who should have the weapon? Who shouldn't have the weapon? The criminals shouldn't have the weapon. But that the truth of the matter is, you can never stop them from having an illegal gun. Never. So then, as a good law-abiding citizen, what they're supposed to do? And now, recently, I've seen a news come through. I think it is Tennessee, state of Tennessee, actually allowed teachers to be armed. Now, this particular issue actually is very concerning to me. I don't support this, what has happened in Tennessee. But can you imagine, a teacher is supposed to teach math, science, reading, writing, physics, chemistry, biology, or they're supposed to figure out when to, you know, use the weapon. Now, if the schools are, you know, going to go into liberals' hand, what is going to happen with that particular law? You know, you are arming a teacher who are actually supposed to teach certain subjects. And you are arming a teacher today in this school, in the schools, we are seeing drag queens and all kinds of, you know, pride, LGBTQ agenda that is being promoted. So with that kind of law gets into hands of a liberal, lunatic, mentally ill person, what is going to happen to the students anyway? So I think it's an unthoughtful law that was passed in Tennessee. I think it was, it's going to create a lot more chaos than the original issue. So what do we do as a normal citizen? I think Second Amendment is a good thing that America has. Now, no other country has it. Secondly, we as a society has to actually totally deliberate as to who should have a gun and who shouldn't. And what do we do with illegal guns that criminals have? And obviously, the connected issues are drug wars and sex wars that's happening through the borders. So it's a very important but quite scary issue. And I don't think we all have any answers, but the Tennessee answer is not an answer to me.
Absolutely.
So arming the teacher is not an answer to me.
Absolutely. Well, originally the Second Amendment was brought so that they could empower the citizens if they want to fight to defend the Constitution.
Correct.
You know, that was the purpose, you know. But it has gone much beyond its purpose now.
Absolutely. And I don't think everybody should have guns. I mean, if you are a normal citizen, why do you need guns anyway? But the things are happening over in this country. So you don't know who's going to come and just, you know, attack you out of nowhere.
Right.
And especially people like me, if you look at me, I'm a Hindu, I'm a conservative. The media doesn't like us. The academia doesn't like us. The general liberal public doesn't like us. And then the protests and riots are happening on the left side of the aisle. So in general speaking, I should be arming myself and the state should protect me. But the state is not going to protect me, people like me. So it's that's where it comes down to the point that at to what extent we as a society want to, you know, make it available to the people and how do we control the criminals with this this issue. So I don't think there is an answer, but the Tennessee's answer is not an answer.
Absolutely. Do you know Bharat was made victim of conspiracies, censorship, and ideological subversions? We all have suffered a lot. Let's end it now. We bring to you Pratyam, an unapologetic video platform for Hindus. Protect your family from false narratives about Bharat. Documentaries, classes, shows that you will not find on YouTube.
Pratyam.
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 Give power to the Hindu voice for the cost of one coffee. Subscribe now at pratyam.com. You often praise Jews for their unity. Do you think that Hindus lack that kind of unity?
You know, Jews are only 0.2% of the world. And Hindus are 15% of the world. Jews have created a country, however tiny it is. But Hindus couldn't create a country. It has come to my light that at this point of time, it's not like all Jews are, you know, Israel friendly or pro-Israel. They actually call them Zionists. So to do we have that sect within the Hindus also? But what Hindus are missing is a cohesive understanding of what has happened to the Hindus. Our ancestors have gone through massive amount of pain and trauma. That's something that we don't know. It has not been taught to us in our schools. They don't teach us our pain. What I see between the difference between Jews and Hindus is one key thing. Jews actually kept alive what has happened to them, but Hindus don't. As Hindus, we try to forget. We say that, okay, whatever has happened, let it go, let's move forward. But how do you move forward when this is a generational trauma? We may not know exactly what our ancestors have gone through because they haven't told us or written or given us, you know, through generational storytelling, they haven't told us. So now, as a soul, as an individual soul, this actually stays, it actually passes through. We forget that. And that's where I think the rejuvenation is coming in Hindu society today. Maybe some, like, you know, Vikram Sampath is writing nice books. You know, Sai Deepak has come with nice, you know, wonderful narratives and things like that. So I think it's a generational trauma that we try to push under the rug. And we think that if we don't talk about it, it's going to go away. It is not going to go away. In order to address any issue, we have to accept it. We have to accept our part of it. And also figure out how do we go forward. Just because we speak about certain things doesn't make us racist or doesn't make us extremist, doesn't make us, you know, radicals and things like that. How do we solve these issues? We cannot go for another 1,000 years like that. We don't have a museum like Jews. We don't have a documentaries like Jews. We don't have any narratives at all. The Jews that even the 2%. That have achieved. To me, what is the purpose of a number? The number means nothing to me. I could be 1% and do much more than 90%. And that's where I think the difference between Jews, and that's why I praise them. I think they have kept their pain, the trauma alive. And that's why they were able to at least create a land for themselves. And it is their rightful land too. It's not like they're stealing somebody else's land. They haven't come and, demanded land from India or America or elsewhere. You know, it's their land and they have historical proof for it. That is their place, and similar to Hindus too. Hindus' land is Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh. Speaking about it is not going to make you and I radical. To me, this is the historical fact, and we should be speaking about it. And if you are trying to silence me, that means you are on the wrong side, and you are trying to take away my voice. And that's why I think I learn so much from the Jew community, and they're very inspirational to me.
Well, that is the reason Prachyam came up with the world's first Hindu OTT platform. And, you know, the tagline, the motto of Prachyam is be unapologetic. And there is a series we came up with. It's on our OTT, The History of Invasions on India. So we have very boldly talked about what we went through in the last 1400 years. You know, the history of Islamic invasions. So you're right, you know, we have to tell the coming generations the true perspective of the history. It's very, very important to do that, you know. And I think it's our duty to bring in light, you know, the true history to the young generation, to the coming generations. And that's what we do, you know, through films and through series that we make. If Hindus were to unite for their cause, what difference would it make?
Fantastic. I think the way I look at Hinduism and Hindutva is the basis and foundation of humanity. As we discussed before, I think there is nothing at this point of time that gives an insect or an ant as the same level of respect that as a human has. But the same with the same context, we also have defense mechanism. If somebody is coming to kill you, you have the right to, you know, save yourself. It all goes together. The respect and dignity of another life. It is so important to me. And I think too, as a Hindus, we carry that with us. We are in America or UK or Australia, New Zealand or India. It doesn't really matter. We actually accept everybody. And that's why I think even with 1% Hindu population in America or 2% in UK or 0.6% or 0.1% in Middle East, we are not troublemakers at all. We actually look at it from a humanity perspective. So our foundation actually gives us the principles of life, principles of a nation, and how to look at another individual. So when I go to Black community, I actually don't see Blackness at all. They see me that I am not like them. They actually tell me, you are not us. And I stand in front of them and I argue with them. Tell me, why am I not you? Do I not bleed like you? Do I not breathe like you? If you slap me, would I not feel pain like you? So why am I not like you? Just because your skin color is different, you think I'm not like you? I don't feel the way you feel. I don't understand your pain. Yes, you have history, but what have the other people have done? So me standing here in front of you as a human, I want the same respect, and I'm going to fight for you. I'm going to fight for you in your dignity as much as my dignity too. So that's how my policy is, shaping. And it's from a humanity standpoint. When I go to any event in the Republican Party, I'm the only brown most of the time. I'm the only person sitting there, standing there talking. I never ask for, is there another person like me? Never do. It's because it doesn't matter to me. I'm not looking for, people like me to accept me. I am the way the God has created me, and I am okay with wherever I am placed. Doesn't matter in the middle of men, in the middle of women, in the middle of transgenders, in the middle of black, white, blue, green, doesn't matter. I am who I am as a human. I should be respected the way God has created me. And I'll be fighting for every single person's identity at this point of time. Even the black community.
Sure, absolutely. That's a very Hindu way, very noble and wise way of looking at the world and looking at things. Very, very good, amazing. If I were to ask you in short, if you have to say a few words as a message to the Hindu community, what would that be?
I think as a Hindu community, we cannot be afraid, frightened about what another community or what entities are going to label us with. We have to be unapologetic, exactly like what you said. And I am unapologetic. I do not care about the labels that comes to me. I will stand firm in my belief. And I hope the Hindu community joins my hand as well, helping me in this cause. It's not just Purnima cause. It's not a XYZ cause. It's for all of us, the humanity cause. Hopefully together we can communicate what are we about through our beliefs, through our faiths, and staying strong about communicating our pain too. And we are as human as others. We are as good as others. We deserve, and we actually deserve to be treated as equal human being, regardless of our faith, regardless of our beliefs, regardless of our path, regardless of our different deities. So that's all I should say. And secularism doesn't mean that you denigrate our own history, heritage, and civilization. You want to be accepting, but it has to come two way. It has to be two-way street at this point of time.
I think we got what we wanted now. It was a good conversation with you.
Okay. I'm so honored to have connected with you and speaking with you. It was fantastic.
The same here, likewise.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So nice meeting you.
Same here, likewise. Okay. All right. Namaste. All right. Namaste.